session. We'll do item 14. This is discussion and consideration, possible action regarding the wording, potential transcripts from programs that have accepted Argosy students as transfers regarding the residency requirement that we have. Ms. Jones, can you update us on what we know up to this point?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, board members, Dr. McCarthy is also here today to address this issue if he wishes to speak. We received information, as you know, Argosy closed earlier this year, so they're having to, the students are trying to transfer into other programs. As the board has discussed at a previous meeting, 322071A5 and K address some issues that directly affect the Argosy students if they want to seek licensure here. One is regarding a residency, and one is regarding attending the program 2 of 3 full years. But the A5 is waived if they attend APA approved program. So one of the schools, National Lewis, and I apologize, I misspelled it in my memo. It's Louis University has indicated they're looking to accept or willing to accept Argosy students, and have asked the board what on their transcript could they use to indicate the residency completion at Argosy. And we discussed it with their associate dean, I believe. And then they reached out, and Dr. McCarthy's working with them also, I believe. And so they're wondering if the language of residency verified would be accepted by the board as completion of that.
So what is the statute?
The statute is ARS 322071K. Applicant shall complete a residency at the institution that awarded the applicant's doctoral degree. And then it goes into what the residency shall require.
This is a sticking point for our licensing law. It was apparently put in the development of our licensing law to block online students from less than reputable schools and trying to limit eligibility to people who actually went to college and matriculated in a campus-based program. We have two groups of students from the Argosy that we had in Phoenix. Keeping in mind there are hundreds of other Argosy students around the country that this could also impact. The clinical students from the APA-approved Argosy clinical program have by and large transferred to the Chicago School of Professional Psychology, with some going to Alliant University. I have worked extensively with the Chicago School and their less than cooperative legal staff. I took wording that I got from our Attorney General's office and asked them if they could include on the transcript, when they brought courses in from the Argosy transcript, that residency requirements had been verified. Rather, their articulation agreement says residency requirements will be waived, which does us no good, doesn't help those students with the law, and they felt that saying they would have been verified would somehow suggest that they accomplish the residency at their program. We said it gave us enough wiggle room here because we knew the program, we knew the school, it was APA approved, yada, 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 and let's let it go. I was not successful in that. I don't know what we're going to do with those students other than to come up with a way around that requirement. The second issue is with Argosy School Psychology, Educational Psychology, PsyDs. This is a program in Phoenix, which I think affects about 40 students, and not APA approved, though there isn't that piece to it. It was approved by the school psychology national accrediting body, NASP. Those students are working on a deal. Dr. McCarthy's working with the university that Jenna noted, National Lewis something University. We've talked at length with their folks and given them the same type of request. Would they please put on the transcript as they move these folks into their school that they had verified the residency requirements had been met? Residency verified, two simple words, let's do it that way. I've yet to hear, after lengthy discussions with them, where they stand with that. If they won't accept it, and we still have the clinical problem, we've got a bunch of students who, for no fault of their own, find themselves at odds with our licensing requirements, even though we know they've met those requirements. Everyone sitting here knows that school, knows those students, knows those teachers. They've all been here for sessions with us. We know who their instructors are. We know that they have met that requirement, but it's not on their damn transcript.
So,
sorry, go ahead.
So my question is, to go through a statutory change is a major issue, which would take us over a year. That's an option to change our damn statute. Then what are the unintended consequences of changing that statute we have to think about as well, because there are clear unintended consequences of changing the statute. Is there a way legally for this board to recognize that these students have done that without it appearing on the transcript? And how close do we really look at the transcripts to see that students have gone through that process with who we go through the applications with now? I know that Dr. Malott is our expert at scanning and understanding transcripts, as she is a dyed-in-the-wool academic who knows more about universities and foreign universities and transfer universities than any of us ever will. And maybe of all the meetings I've attended with her, she's been the one in the background looking at that stuff. I don't know if she's looked at residency issues specifically, if any of us have. But by and large, it's because we know the students went to school. If we saw they came from Argosy, we didn't question it. They got a degree from Argosy. Mm-hmm. We knew they met the requirement, which is the way I'd like to handle this, to be perfectly honest. If they come in to us with a transcript that says 99% of their coursework was accomplished at Argosy Phoenix, that we go, yeah, they met the requirement, and we move through it. Does that put us in a compromised position in breaking our own law and setting a precedent that we don't want to set as a board? And that is an attorney general's statement that we need to look in some ways for some type of situational relief in a situation that's going to happen once in a blue moon, if never again, that a university, you know, goes out of business in the middle of a semester and leaves all of these students hanging. who are scrambling now to get a degree conferred by another university, which they've never attended, when we have a requirement that says you must be in residence at the university granting that degree, which is the statute language that we're dealing with. Dr. Millant.
So there's really two groups of students.
Yes.
The first group is people who've transferred, but they have time left in their degree. Even if they have 1 year, it's not a problem.
Correct.
Because they can meet the residency requirement if they're taking classes. I've talked to a few of the students who moved to other universities, and they're taking classes. They're not going on internship. The group that we are really talking about are those students who had already accepted, in most cases, an APA or an APIC internship.
Correct.
They've transferred to another university. They're completing their internship, and they'll be done. So one of the things they need is 18 hours. I don't know what the requirements are at those institutions. So if they, I mean, this is a technicality, if they took 9 hours in the fall and spring, then I say they've met the requirement, even though they are internships, because part of an internship is you have direct regular contact with faculty and other matriculated, and if they met through some mean, I mean, I'm just looking for ways, you know, without really changing our statutes. They're obviously involved in learning, and they have to have 18 semester hours completed within a 12-month consecutive period.
Now so you're looking at taking students and charging them an ungodly amount of money for...
I'm giving that. Some of them might be in that boat.
Yeah.
Then, even though they're only spending a year at that institution, they technically meet the statutes. And if the program were to have, you know, two or three meetings or direct, regular, you know, I mean, that's where it's kind of left to interpretation.
Well, the students that are, the ones that have coursework left, it's not a problem.
Yeah. I'm just saying this is one
I've got
option.
A dozen of them in my shop right now mm-hmm. who September 1st will finish their internship mm-hmm. and they'll be looking to get a degree.
Okay, they're already in an internship.
They're already in an internship. Mm-hmm. I've got another, I have 25 interns next year. At least 12 of them are Argosy.
Mm-hmm.
And they went through this last year's match. They will start in September. The only thing they need to graduate is to finish that internship.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
There's no more courses to take or dollars to pay.
So I have a second suggestion. So the Arizona Board of Private and Post-Secondary Education, what if we work with them? Because they're the ones who are holding all the transcript information, and
yeah.
if, you know, something like that, if they wrote a letter indicating, you know, and that we accept that in lieu of...
Of the transcript.
That they have completed.
I would love that. And I turn to the Attorney General and say...
So I believe that this matter was vetted with Jean Galvin, and so I would defer to her because I know she's been following this.
Excellent. Is it possible?
I guess. Think the boards can work together, and if that's something you want to explore, you can direct your executive director to look into that. But I think the way that it's agendized here today is for possible wording on a transcript that you believe is acceptable to you upon someone seeking application from this board.
Well, a letter attached to the transcript, if we can stretch it that far. If what we require in an application, in addition to those reference letters, what we require in an application is a transcript. And if the transcript came with a letter attached by the other board saying they verified that the residency was completed at Argosy, would that be a reasonable accommodation we could accept?
You know, again, I would refer to Jean Galvin, but if that's something you want to explore.
Yes, I want to explore something that's not going to cost these kids who've been ripped off thousands of dollars more and create heartache in these kids have invested hundreds of thousands of dollars in their education.
Understand that.
I don't want them messed with anymore, and least of all a statute that we put in to make kids go to these schools. ASU, U of A, Argosy, Midwest, whomever, NAU, we wanted them to go to good schools. They did. They did everything right. And now we're saying you don't meet our residency requirement. That's crazy.
This is a very unique situation. Hopefully we won't have to address it in the future. I know when there is more urgent or emergency action, the executive board will or even the governor will become involved. Would there be something that could be issued from that office?
And that's where the Arizona State Board of Post-Secondary is the...
Is within the executive...
Yes.
But I'm even... I know that Governor Ducey is aware of the situation.
And they could get that from the governor. So that's the board to work with.
Okay.
Let me... In talking with Jean Galvin on many issues, because we've always not agreed here, we've had a couple of things that we've fought over, like the stupid claims process. I never said that.
Strike it from the record.
It's on the record. God damn stupid claims process. It makes no sense, and I think is illegal. Can't arrest somebody for spitting on the sidewalk when you don't make it illegal till 2 years after they spit on the sidewalk, but we did that here. It's still wrong. Jeannie has always been concerned that we set a precedent by breaking our statutes or rules, and it gets us and future boards in trouble. But as Dr. Points out, this is never going to happen again. Not in our lifetime, not in our foreseeable board's existence.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going out of business, are you, up there?
Mm-hmm.
He's checking. Can we accept it and without setting a precedent because we know the students in this situation? Can we look at it and use common sense?
So, you know... I understand the issue, Dr. Bohansky, and understand how difficult it is for these students. So the memo that you have from the executive director, it outlines possible language that the board can consider in terms of that institution who has agreed to take some of these students, National Lewis. Would that be acceptable for the board to accept that residency requirement? And so that's... If you're okay with the proposal from the executive director, I think that's kind of what you're looking at. If you want to have private post-secondary board issue a letter for each student in terms of the internship, I don't believe that's been vetted yet.
Residency.
Excuse me, residency.
But the residency... That they can read the transcript and say this person attended a university that's described in a way that's described in the statutes, they met the residency.
And that's an option you can explore if that's what you choose.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just wondering, too, I know when I was newer on the board, there were substantive statements that would
different.
Kind of take care of, is there a way that could be summed up?
Damn universities won't put it on the transcript for fear of misrepresentation on their end. We have the language that if they put, on the bottom of the all the stuff they transferred in and said residency verified, we'd be willing to accept that. Jeannie's would be willing to accept that. Let us go through accepting these students. But we haven't been able to get a university to agree to do it. It's a legal conundrum in which their attorneys are saying you can't put on a transcript to transfer verifying something that happened at another university, only what happens at your own.
And again, the problem is even if Arizona were to accept, they moved to another state, But maybe the other states don't have that language.
Well, we haven't vetted all the other states to see if they have it, but we can also then encourage them to get their CPQ or to get their...
And then they can use that.
And then that all that other stuff gets waived. And they're just going to be a niche group, what they call donut holes, if it was in the Medicare system. This 2-year group of students that are the big concern, the ones graduating from their internships this September and the ones that will graduate next September. Sign contracts with APIC. Mm-hmm. They're done.
And APA is allowing them to count. I mean, they will still be considered graduating from an accredited program.
Yeah, the Professional Accrediting Association is accepting it. Mm-hmm. And we as a board are sitting here saying we know it's right. We should accept it. How do we legally do it? Damn attorneys. Apparently.
Maybe an executive order of the governor can bypass this, you know?
Is that something that can work?
So I know that Ms. Galvin is looking into this, and I know that she is trying to come up with a solution that you all want to help these students. So, you know, I think that the having private post-secondary issue a letter, I believe that is something new, and I don't know if that's been evaluated yet by Ms. Galvin, but I can relay that message to her and have her look into that as well as these other issues. But I know that they're moving towards trying to find a way to assist these students. So I think that's kind of the intent here. I understand the issue, but again, this is going to have to be something that Ms. Galvin discusses with you.
And
I believe she has reached out to you, Dr. Bohansky. So.
We've had multiple discussions. This has been a hot issue for me for some time. The other thing is we have to be aware that whatever solution we come up with is not going to cover all of them. There's going to be somebody that falls through the cracks. That I think we can cover most of them. But there's going to be somebody whose situation just falls outside of whatever we come up with. And that's going to be an issue as well. If the governor would issue a, what the hell would you even call it, a proclamation? Saying that students who were in the class of da-da-da-da-da-da at Argosy
by the...
are granted residency for purposes of, I mean, he's hot on licensure. He wants licensure stuff to be barrier free. And if we can present it to the governor as a way of making licensure stupid restrictions for this group barrier free, that might fly. Would the universities object?
To this? No. I mean, this is a licensing issue. This is not a university.
And maybe if post-secondary agreed with us and we went together to the governor?
I think, to me, the post-secondary board has been really helpful through all these different issues, and so it's just something. I have the contact and name and the person we've talked to.
They're just across the hall. I have no problem going and speaking to him to see what we could do.
So you know the guy, Kevin, who's the head.
Who's their attorney?
Probably AG's office.
I don't know who their current AG is. Do you, Sabrina?
It's Frankie Eckberg, Assistant Attorney General.
Yeah, the first person they're going to ask, can we view this, is going to be their attorney.
Because they are also a keeper of the student records, and they're issuing transcripts. You see what I mean? They have
yeah.
some.
Mm-hmm. So. They're in the cycle then. They're yeah. holding Argosy's
records.
Transcript records.
Mm-hmm. That's why I keep thinking.
Are they going to turn those over to ASPPB?
That is
the students
discussion.
Can request.
Pardon?
That is the discussion.
That's
okay.
The plan?
Okay.
Yeah, eventually ASPPB holds the transcripts of all the universities across the country that have closed.
Oh, okay.
To keep them in one spot where you'd get your licensing test scores and your credentials bank and what have you.
Well, that's for the doctoral, but obviously, at least in Arizona, at other programs.
Yeah, they keep everything, you know, the beauty colleges and all that stuff is up there, but the professional stuff goes to the professional associations that maintain it. And in our case, the Association of Licensing Boards is going to hold it. Well, Mike, have you got stuff you want to come up and tell us where we're wrong or what we're not looking at or what we forgot about?
Yeah, great discussion. You really hit on really important points, all of you. And I was really most concerned with the school psychology students. And right now, National Lewis is talking about taking 14 of our doctoral students who are pretty much done. Just some of them will be done in a couple of months. Some of them will just have internship. There's only two or three who still need coursework there, too. And according to Dr. Carr, who is their vice provost, he has indicated he'll take our students if it's somehow approved or designated by this board, perhaps, as you indicated on the transcripts. And I see the transcript as one option. You could do that, but then you could go ahead and continue with Kevin Lamonte at the post-secondary board, or also go through the governor. Because putting on a transcript will probably take care of these these National Lewis students, but not those Chicago students. There is a little timeline that Dr. Carr at National Lewis really only has about 2 weeks, and then he's not going to accept our students at that point. We don't have any other place for them at this point. So if I notice that in your regulation, I think it says official documents. And I notice also in your regulation, there are other places where you have accepted letters from perhaps the registrar or the department chair. And so I would say if you could expand your options, which would help more students, including those Chicago students, if you could have a letter that attaches either from post-secondary, the registrar of the transferring school, or on the transcripts, that gives you more options that meet more of these students. And there's probably a couple hundred of them. And I do remember at your last meeting, I heard you say there's a great shortage of psychologists in this state, and there's an even greater shortage of school psychologists in this state, too. And there's hardly any licensed school psychologists in this state, probably about 20 of them. And so anything we can do to help that process along would really help. But the immediate concern for this is what you mean by official documents. And to me, official document could be a letter, but that's something you'd have to interpret, or something on the transcript, too. So that's what I know so far about National Lewis, and appreciate your thoughts on that. But any questions on that I can help you with? Yes?
So what you're explaining is that we have to decide this in 2 weeks?
Well, if you made a decision today, I think National Lewis would be okay with putting a transcript verified on the transcript that was okayed by you and went through the
Residency verified.
Residency verified. That would help them. And the Chicago students, I think, have a lot more time. They've already been accepted, a lot of them. And so you have some time to fix that there, too.
My understanding is if residency verified is on that transcript that
I think we should be able to.
We can accept that. That decision is, as far as I know, in discussions I've had with Ms. Galvin, has already been made that we can do that. Can we get a post-secondary letter attached to it? I'd be willing to do that again as a secondary or a backup for somebody or whatever else we need to do. I think we probably ought to have two or three different go-forward plans here. But I've talked to National Lewis about that and told them those words on it, we will accept.
Okay.
I don't know what more we can tell them.
National Lewis, the vice provost, he says he'd feel better if we had some kind of email or letter from the board saying what those words or some process, and he said he'd be okay then.
Dr. Wilhansky, my concern is that you very much have referred this back to Ms. Galvin, and I didn't realize we have such a short time.
Neither did I. When is she back in town?
I believe she'll be back in town next week, but the way the matter's agendized, it's for you to determine whether or not or what wording on the potential transcripts from programs that have been accepted in terms of the Argosy student transfer. So if you wanted to vote on language that would be acceptable to the board, it is agendized for you to do that. And the recommendation, as placed from the memo from the executive director, reads, quote, residency verified at prior program. So if you wanted to memorialize that in a vote, now's your time to do that. If you want alternatives or other options, Ms. Galvin can coordinate that, and the executive director can reach out to the executive director of private post-secondary as another additional option for you as well.
Okay, then I would move that we accept the language.
I second it.
On the transcript.
On the transcript. And that additionally, we pursue the post-secondary letter that could be attached to a transcript. That way we've got two shots at somebody throwing us out.
I second that.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion?
Does that include a letter to the Lewis?
First we make the decision, then we figure out how we're going to follow through with it.
And it would be either or. Correct.
Well, the private post-secondary matter hasn't been vetted quite yet.
Just pursue. Yeah.
So that's just another option.
Oh, okay.
So why we're here today is potential wording
on
a transcript that might be submitted to the board for application. If you're comfortable with the language residency verified at prior program, if that's acceptable to the board for National Lewis to have, you know, that on the transcript for applicants who seek licensure here, that's why you're voting today.
So how about we say this, residency verified at prior doctoral granting? I don't know. Is that too wordy? Meaning?
It was intentionally vaguer than and because.
Okay, for what, that's fine.
Whatever
I mean, you know
legal.
Exactly. I mean, they're not going to. I'm fine. I don't want to make it more complicated.
Right. Moving on.
Yeah.
All right. All in favor? Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Staff, would you please work with Dr. McCarthy to send an email informing the provost that the board has accepted that at its meeting as of this date? We can do that Monday.
Probably today.
We'll do that today. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
That work, Mike?
Perfect.
All right. Thank you, everyone. And this is just one of those damn crazy things that I think Dr. McCarthy's absolutely right. We're short good psychologists in our schools, and the problems in our schools only continue to raise. And we can't get good trained people in them who want to work with kids. We're in problem. I'd like to see that happen. All right, I'm going to try to move ahead to item 11. Let me check the phone line here. Dr. Goldfine, are you online?
Hello, this is Dr. Deborah Goldfine. Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you very much. If you just hold on a second, we're going to start your issue.
Okay, thank you very much.
Ms. Jones, would you please provide an update to the board?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, board members, back in February 2016, the board received an application from Dr. Goldfine. Subsequently, she was offered a license with a consent agreement in December of 2017. It was to include a 24-month period of probation. She was to obtain supervision for her practice of 2 hours per 20 hours worked, and this could be decreased after 6 months. She was also to attend a three-hour semester course in ethics and complete bodily fluid testing for no less than 3 months. In November 18, the board office received her first report from her supervisor, Dr. Janine DeMarte, And it stated that Dr. Goldfein had worked from the period of July 30th of 2018 through November 5th of 2018. Staff had questions about the supervision as it did not appear to meet the requirements and brought it to the board's attention. Subsequent at a meeting before the board on March 8th, 2019, the board discussed the matter with Dr. Goldfein and had questions of her. As a result, they requested that she complete random testing on a regular basis and enter into a subsequent amended consent agreement wherein she would agree to continue the random testing and provide a letter to the board with her plan for completing the probationary terms. An amended consent agreement was sent to her in March, and she had questions and did not want to sign it at that point without having further clarification. We've attached a copy of her letter to your materials, and we've sent her some names for a practice monitor. In a recent conversation with her, I believe it was yesterday, she states that she is continuing the testing. She has questions about presenting her consent agreement to employers and whether she really needs to sign the amended consent agreement for the reinstated fluid testing because she is doing it. And she understands now that she does not need a six-month extension on the probationary term because technically under the terms of the probation order, her term, when she's not working, it stayed. So it's not like ticking, the time is not ticking with her probationary order since she's not working. So I just suggested that Dr. Goldfein attend today's meeting so she could clarify the terms with you all. She could discuss her concerns about signing the amended consent agreement and try to figure out where we go from here. I also had a question because the board never really did decide whether or not they wanted to accept the first monitoring reports. Because as I stated, staff had some concerns with the hour requirements being met in each week that she reported being supervised. Thank you.
All right. Has everybody had a chance to read the documents? Mm-hmm. Are there questions of Dr. Goldfein? Dr. Flowers.
Yes, Dr. Goldfein, I'm wondering if you've returned to employment again or if you're still in the search mode.
I am still currently searching. I do get people that are interested who are not able to provide the 4 hours of face-to-face supervision for the full-time employment. There's less part-time employment available, which is easier, you know, for them to provide 2 hours as in my previous situation. But no, I'm not currently employed. I'm still in the job search.
Okay, you're saying though that you can get part-time more readily than full-time?
I have not gotten either
okay.
Since the last position that I was in. But what I was saying is part of the difficulty is with the full-time employment, they would have to give me 4 hours of face-to-face, which is difficult for most organizations. So part-time is more amenable, to my situation for the first 6 months before I can possibly move to the 50% drop for the last 6 months.
And you're saying that you have continued the drug screens?
If I heard you correctly, you asked if I am continuing my job search.
I guess I need to speak more clearly. The required drug surveillance, are you continuing to submit it?
Let me take you off speaker and try it on next to my ear. I'm having trouble hearing you. Could you repeat that question?
Okay, I'm wondering if you're doing the drug screenings.
Yes, after the meeting, I signed up as a voluntary tester, which is a different process at CAPS than the other people there that are required by other agencies to do. I signed up for monthly, and I have to log into an app every day, and it tells me whether or not it's my day to come in. So I did that in April, and I did that in May. As of this month, I have not, haven't been called in yet. But I did it, I signed up for monthly, because I thought Dr. Brundage had said that she had wanted me to do monthly testing. In my original consent agreement, it says twice monthly. At the point that I had discussed with Ms. Jones and regarding the addendum, is that, as I read it, the language that you used in the original consent agreement would actually include this, in that you indicated a minimum of 3 months. You didn't say, that you couldn't want more than that. And I did intend, for my last 6 months of employment, to go back to the testing, friends of my application. It's intrusive and it's complicated. So that's why I was on my own, or going to do another 6 months anyway.
Okay.
So, it would still be your discretion to not accept my petition if I did not do more than 3 months. So I think the concerns of the board are still covered in the original without the addendum. And, and I'm going to continue doing it. My concern is that if I have to then show the addendum to an employer, it implies as if I have, somehow broken that original agreement or failed it, which might hamper and encumber my ability to be employed. So I was requesting, to not have an addendum with that. And just, in the spirit of the original one, if I didn't continue, it's still not accept my petition anyway. Because it says a minimum of 3 months. It doesn't say only 3 months.
As I recall, the intent of the amendment was to make it monthly throughout the period of probation. So that would be a change.
I'm having a hard time hearing.
Maybe you can repeat what he said.
Okay, should I move closer or something?
That might be better. Or just speak more directly into your microphone.
Yes, my understanding was the...
Here's the original question.
Can you hear this?
Yeah, it's a little muffled, but I can hear you.
Okay, I will try to be more direct into to the phone here. Basically, the amended version of the consent agreement would be that it would change, and it would be a monthly drug requirement, and that would go throughout the period of probation, not just for several months. And my understanding is, with the amendment, you'd have to show that to the employer.
I couldn't hear all of what you said.
Dr. Brundage.
Dr. Goldfein, it's Dr. Brundage. Can you hear me?
I can hear. Okay. Yes.
All right. I am concerned. In fact, I thank you for participating today, because I think the intent of probation had been to get you to find a job and be monitored so that we could determine whether you are safe to practice. And one of the things that I'm hearing today is that the requirements are inhibiting you from finding a job. Is that a basic summary?
Given that other job right away, but the market is a little difficult because there's a lot of applicants that don't have an encumbered license. There is the possibility of private practice. I'm trying to do, to get into a group setting. But yes, I think I will be able to do it. It's just, I think part of your question about, you know, why it was taking me so long, I was trying to explain that it's not because I don't want to finish it or be employed. It just has not been an easy process, and I've had to make money. I have real estate stuff, so, you know, but I'm completely committed and want to finish. I want to emphasize that.
Okay. Dr. Goldfein, our priority is to make sure that you're safe and provide competent professional care to your clients or patients. What can you provide today that would address that and something that you could be committed to complete?
Well, I am meeting today with one of the monitors I was provided, Dr. Picone. To see, you know, if he might be able to supervise me. And I was going to take the ethics course at our OSC, but I'm now going to be taking it through ASU, because I didn't have to complete that till before my consent agreement was finished. I didn't do it right away because it's going to cost $2,000. But I should be able to do it this fall for ASU instead of our OC. And, you know, I'm going to continue plugging away. And I can, you know, I have no problem, you know, continuing with CAF, you know, every month. And I think that still, you still have the discretion for me to do more than 3 months in the original one as opposed to adding it as an addendum. Because you do take a minimum, not
that
all you could possibly require.
Dr. Goldfein, my concern is that I hear a lot of "I'm going to" or "I'm going to meet this afternoon" or whatever. That language is future-based, and my concern is that you do not seem to be making movement on any of the requirements that we've had. I do understand the challenge of employment, but I would guess that there's probably an easier chance to get part-time employment than full-time employment. And at this point, I'm not seeing evidence of anything.
Well, I did do 3 months. It was more or less, it was a recipe for burnout doing, you know, 15 Social Security disability evaluations each week, you know, at very low pay. So, you know, I did the testing when I needed to immediately, and then the course, you know, was to be done at, you know, just before I was finished.
Dr. Goldfein, remind me when the last day of that position occurred.
That was in November.
November of 2000.
Of this past year, yes. And then I was up in Idaho working on real estate properties that we have up there for a few months.
So you have been basically unemployed for 7 or 8 months?
Right. Well, after I had gone up to do that work, Ms. Jones let me know that there might be an issue with the spine. So then I was in limbo until that was resolved because I did not feel, you know, I didn't know if, you know, what was going to come of that. And I didn't want to get in a situation where I wouldn't have it, where I'd end up not having a license in a new position if my other supervision hadn't met the requirement, if you understand what I'm saying. But, you know, I needed the clarification. I got that last meeting because I had presented all the materials and asked the questions. So it appeared that that was finished. And then I got the consent agreement with the addendum, which, you know, is where I'm at now, you know, seeing if there's a way to address that, you know, just by continuing with the original consent agreement.
Thank you.
Would you like executive session, Dr. Bohansky?
Please. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Have a motion and a second for executive session. Let's stay here and ask the room to clear.
Davey should be there also.
Great, thank you. All right, we're back. Is there further question or discussion? I think we have a proposal that we'd like to make. I think what we'd like to do is change the consent agreement, meaning we both consent to this, and we drop the supervision to 2 hours instead of four, and continue the drug testing, which you're doing anyway, for the duration of the probation. That's acceptable to you?
Yes.
All right.
Absolutely.
And staff, board members?
So are we including the ongoing drug testing in the new consent? Because I think that was one of her concerns.
Yes. The new consent agreement would be 2 hours of supervision and ongoing fluid monitoring for the duration of probation.
Once a month?
Once a month.
You don't believe that you were truly covering, your new questions or within the original, where you still had discretion, meaning that it was only a minimum of 3 months? It doesn't feel like that.
My recollection, what I was going to propose is that we have an consent agreement that has not been signed, that we make a motion to withdraw the amended first. I think that's the first thing we need to do. And then we can go into discussion on what new amendments we want to make to the original consent agreement. So the first motion I'm going to make is that we wish to withdraw. We had approved to issue an amended consent agreement. And I don't know if the person who made that motion has to do it, but I'm making a motion that we withdraw the amended consent agreement that is not yet signed.
Second. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Opposed? All right,
now we want to discuss making amendments to the...
All right, now we're talking original. About another amendment.
Mr. Chair, I'm seeing 2 hours in the original.
Correct.
So we wouldn't...
2 hours, maybe 20. So it's 4 hours.
It's two for 20.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So what we're talking about now is amending the consent agreement to 2 hours per 40-hour week, mm-hmm. plus continuing drug testing once a month for the duration of probation.
I'm not sure. I feel like she's met that, and I'm not in favor of that.
So 2 hours supervision. And we can stop drug testing?
She can do it on her own, but we can stop.
But we're not going to require it.
Okay.
Discussion?
That was my understanding as well.
Okay. Is there a motion to that?
Can I discuss?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, why don't we make a motion and then...
Okay.
Is there a motion for that?
I'll make that motion.
I second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second, and now discussion is open.
Dr. Goldfein, one of my focuses is how to get you back into the workforce, go through the probationary period, prove to the board that you're competent and safe to practice, and then you can move on with your life. I do understand that the requirements that we've had seem to be onerous in finding work, but I think that with this lightening, it should provide you an impetus to go find a find this experience. Because you haven't been employed, your probationary period becomes extended, and we're asking for 1 year total supervision. So if it's been 8 months that you have not been employed, it just adds that much more time. So I would urge you to try and find employment as quickly as possible.
Thank you. I mean, I think the change in the consent agreement will most definitely be able to make that happen for me.
Okay, Dr. Flower?
Dr. Goldfein also wanted to make an observation or recommendation. I've done some of those social security disability evaluations as well. They are very arduous. And one thing to keep in mind when you're speaking with your supervisor is to figure out just how much of each client you see, well, not how much of the time you see them, and the allied stuff you do with it, the report writing and so forth, that I believe would count as practice. You don't just see them and do nothing. You do a lot of work. And so keep that in mind as you're getting your supervision and that kind of thing. And it'll hopefully, if you do that kind of work again, make the time move more quickly as far as meeting compliance.
Okay. All right. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Roll call, please. I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry. We have to do a roll call vote. Ms. Poe, if you would, please.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Davey?
I'll abstain because I'm not.
Oh, yeah.
What you said?
He abstains. Mr. Donaldson?
Yes.
Dr. Malott?
Yes.
Dr. Meyer?
Yes.
Dr. Brundage?
Yes.
Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Yes.
Dr. Bohansky?
Yes.
Dr. Flowers?
Yes.
We've got 7 yeses and 1 abstention. Motion passes.
Okay, motion is carried. Thank you. Dr. Brundage.
The motion is carried. I know that she has provided voluntarily the drug screening thing.
Right.
Obviously, it's not part of our order, but I would think that it would be a issue of good faith if that would continue.
Okay. She has heard you?
Absolutely.
All right, then we will have staff get in touch with you to sign the new consent agreement that we have just passed through with the 2 hours of supervision per 40 hours.
Okay.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
We're going to move on to number 19. We still have B and C. To get soliciting your thoughts. This is possible action for changes in our rules. R426-111-1, should the level of supervision that can be conducted via telepractice be changed?
It's currently 50%.
Currently we're at 50% practice. Or supervision, rather, can be accomplished over telemed.
I say no. Sorry. But I mean, I didn't mean to throw my pen. Just.
You have some feelings about this?
It just happened.
Would you like to talk about it?
Freudian slip.
No, but I was just thinking 50%. I think supervision and that face-to-face contact is important because we've just seen, you know, we've had a couple of cases today where supervision is critical in the development of early psychologists. And there's something about looking somebody directly in the eye. Yes, Dr. Bohansky.
Other input, please.
No. Dr. Bohansky.
Do not have to throw a pen in order to talk. I will be happy to recognize you without such acts of passive aggressiveness or overt aggression. So,
the video conferencing can be eye to eye and effective.
It is. Don't see the hand twitching.
The sweat profusion.
I got news for you, folks. Some of us are getting a little gray, whatever we got left. This current generation, especially this current generation of kids that we treat, don't distinguish much between something that's on the screen and something that's live and in person. These new high-definition monitors that we have and do, I got to say, a good 30-40% of our psyche evals right now are occurring over telemed with those high-definition screens. I don't like it. To be personal with you, I would agree with Dr. Malott. It's up close and personal that makes the most sense to me. But it's the future. It's actually what's coming, and it's coming a hell of a lot quicker. And I'm not sure what other states require or allow. But I know when Mayo Clinic does 100% supervision of their residents over telemed, then they haven't been in the runner-up position. They've been up front with stuff. So,
Dr. Bohansky, I think that this promise of 5G is going to provide an entirely different
experience.
Yeah. I concur. I would prefer real life classes, and I would prefer face to face. But I don't know if that's the leading edge.
We do have a very generous provision with the 50%.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that we're not allowing. But then you're talking about, and the other thing that can happen, and it has happened, I live in a very online world, and technology fails. Yes, invariably, does. You can count on that.
I think Dr. Bohansky makes a very good point. I think things are changing. I think it's obvious by the old people here that we're slow to change, and our young generation will bring it to our attention that it's not good enough.
What do our youngins think?
I
agree here.
I mean, I'll speak on behalf of the generation. No, just kidding. Just kidding. I will say one of the pitfalls.
I want her personnel file. We're checking birth dates here.
Any guesses? I mean, I won't announce it here, but I'll let you take a stab at it. No, I think that one of the things that we've ran into in behavior analysis, where we are able to do the supervision fully online, is that people have started to take shortcuts around purchasing of the technology to really be HIPAA secure. And what starts to happen is they start to exclude certain parts of conversations out of the supervision sessions. They're using bits of information that's kind of oddly coded, and I think that it is a problem. So I think paired with the technology, there still needs to be very specific guidelines of expectations around what that supervision should look like, or otherwise I do think that shortcuts are, we're seeing it in our side a lot, where those shortcuts are happening in order to save money because they don't want to buy HIPAA compliant software or what have you, and that's problematic.
Dr. Davis Wilson makes a very good point.
Mm-hmm.
Something we have to address.
Well, the leaders in the field of telemed have been the University of Arizona, who started the process more than 25 years ago in this state, back when we called it closed circuit TV. These were big boxes, not big things. And they continued with that process, and it's continued to evolve. The closed circuit stuff was obviously HIPAA compliant before HIPAA was HIPAA. And there are a good number of folks out there who are ethical and using HIPAA compliant everything. In fact, more and more we're all moving toward that. We don't have much choice. The electronic clinical record, the shared electronic clinical record, the integrated electronic clinical record, the telepsych, telemed stuff, it's coming. We moved this up to 50%. And I'll make another observation for those of us who sit in these big cities like Phoenix and don't pay attention to the needs of psychologists and interns in rural places in this state, and I'll have you note that that's the vast majority of this state, it's harder than hell to get supervision for an intern or someone doing learning in Kingman or in Bullhead or Winslow or Holbrook or a bunch of other places where we don't have psychologists on site. And it's a problem. And that's why Arizona was a leader, University of Arizona, in medicine for telemed, because you couldn't get docs there either. And doing public health and working in that area, I have offices in Bullhead and Kingman and you name it. And I can't get people. We do a lot of our psychiatric and psychological work over telemed. And that's increasing by percentage every year. Would I love to have it all in person? You bet. It's not possible. It's not practical in the rural areas of our state. And I think as an Arizona board, we got to be accepting and responsive to the needs, not just of those of us in urban centers, but those of us who have colleagues and patients in rural settings as well.
Dr. Bransky make a good status or stance for expanding the level of supervision. But like Dr. Davis-Wilson says, yes, expand it, but you also need to take a look at regulations, the stuff that guides it.
And they exist. And ARB is the one that I can quote first, is that they required certified docs and clinicians that had to go through their course to be able to use telemed to see clients. And there are a set of training and standards and protocol that was actually invented in this little town called Flagstaff that anybody working in northern Arizona on their telemed system had to go through. Those things exist, and we certainly put our staff through it.
Mr. Chair, do you wonder, I at least wonder, though, how many, if we're talking about supervision, to how many individuals see supervisees as clients as well? And again, that's, I'm, like I said, in behavior analysis, we do a lot of remote supervision. And it's along the same realm. And there's a lot of research to show that even in supervising parents and supporting them remotely in kind of peer middle treatment in those rural areas is of benefit. But I know in behavior analysis, again, we also have, and we've seen it here at the board as well, that sometimes it's that supervisory relationship that they don't see then as that as the supervisee being a client as well. And I think that's where, at least in kind of the national side of behavior analysis, that's where people get hung up, is they're seeing that relationship as kind of a coworker colleague relationship versus actually seeing it to the same level that you know we've talked historically about.
Anyone have a proposal? We're at 50%.
Well, just to float it out there, I'd recommend 75%, moving it up. Because how's the applicant in Mexican hat going to travel back and forth to get the face-on-face, face-to-face? That ain't going to happen. But that person in Mexican hat deserves equal opportunity.
I agree. In fact, I like that number myself.
Is that a second?
Huh?
Is that a second?
If you're making a motion, I'd second
it. I made a motion to 75.
All right, I'll second that.
Great.
You know, is it up for discussion?
Sure.
No, I keep thinking about that supervision relationship. It is the most important thing
I agree.
In the preparation of psychologists and behavior analysts and the relationship between the supervisor and the supervisee. And having that relationship is so critical for good supervision. And while it can happen remotely, if there's not enough face-to-face meetings, that relationship doesn't develop. It becomes a very kind of a distance. It's distant. You know, you just don't... I have 30% of my faculty in remote, and any time they come to campus and we do... It's such a bonding experience, and then we can tolerate the ambiguity of being apart, because when we come together, we connect, we form those deeper connections that only happens when we see each other face-to-face, when we can, you know, give somebody, you know, just that personal relationship develops in that face-to-face encounter. And that 1 year of supervision, it's just 1 year, you know, in most cases. It's so critical for the development. Because after that, unless you come before this board, majority of people don't get any more supervision for the rest of their 40, 50-year career. And so anyway, I'm just...
I think to Dr. Bohansky's point, though, I think we are dealing with an incoming generation and kind of the aging issue of there's a lot of people who really don't see the difference in the relationship in person and electronically. And I'll tell you, when I was a director before, like the number one conversation I had to have with my staff was constantly like, just pick up the phone, call them, because they're so quick to text or to want to
email
or
walk down to the office.
Yeah, but I think that with the more we see technology, the more, you know, this is the direction that, I mean, my own children probably couldn't pick up a phone and call because they've got Siri and Alexa to do it for them, you know, and so we're coming into this really strange time that I agree with you, and I valued the relationships with my supervisors and being able to see them even now as mentors because we were able to form those relationships. But I also see in even raising my own young children that it's very different, and it's only going to continue to get different.
Yes, we've gone through some significant changes in our lifetime.
Yep, big time.
I won't talk about my supervision. That was in hot tubs, but...
Let's not talk about it.
That's how old I am. Esalen was a wonderful time.
I struggle because I concur with Ramona, or Dr. Malott. And yet I also know we have a whole brave new world. How do you insist on people creating personal relationships? And I think all of us in this room who've gone through a professional supervision, we know and really honor how those shaped our lives. So,
can I make one more argument point? So, as I said, you know, I live in a very online world, and it really bothers me when I have a faculty meeting in the college, the people in Flagstaff call in. And I'm like, why can't you be in the room? This was created for our distance faculty. But people in Flagstaff, and that's what will happen to all supervision. People in the same town, and because it's allowed, will take advantage. I mean, it's not just for the people at a distance. That's just how the, and I will have 50 to 75% of the callers, and I'm looking, and of course I have no idea now where they are. Maybe they're in Mexico, or maybe they're on the beach, or maybe they're,
exactly.
You know. I mean, people just taking advantage, really, what was created to help our distance and remote people are now, it's being taken advantage of too, you know. And there's no way I can say, well, why aren't you here? You know. So
Well, while you struggle to get a hold of your faculty, we'll we'll move forward. We've got a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I just wanted to add to that point, because I agree, and I really do agree with the experience and getting to be in person. And I do, I think people down the hall from each other will be doing it. Like, that's just kind of the reality of it. But I also find that as even in the urban areas, the problem that at least we see in behavior analysts still being very an underserved group still, in that we have a lot of kids to be seen, a lot of adults to be seen, and not enough behavior analysts to go around. I find that remote sometimes serves as a benefit to allow for us to provide increased amount of supervision, because I'm not having to stop at, you know, the hour mark because I've got an hour drive before my next appointment, but rather I can spend more time with them, being able to you know, give them more of my time without having to worry about the barriers of travel and things like that as well.
Very good point. That's a big waste of time, is a travel or going to a meeting at NAU and sitting there and waiting for somebody to finally start the meeting and yada yada, where you could be on the phone or visual and you could see them, and the meeting starts right, like right now, or if they're waiting, if they're procrastinating, you could be doing other things instead of just sitting there waiting for somebody to get action. And this reminds me about telepsychology. I can remember being on the board here, telepsychology? What's this world coming to?
Maybe we should do an experiment. Let's have all board meetings on telepsychology and see how I mean, you know.
That's a big investment.
How big did investment. We get the wrong case?
All of my ASPPB meetings are on Zoom. And that damn thing with a high definition screen, you'd swear that person's right there.
Yep.
So
5G's going to improve it.
I'm already doing it. So, anywho, we got a motion and a second. All in favor, aye.
I think it should be a roll call.
Is it? We're going for 75%.
We have a request for a roll call, Ms. Poe.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Donaldson.
Yes.
Dr. Malott?
No.
Dr. Davey?
Yes.
Dr. Bohansky?
Yes.
Dr. Flowers?
No.
Dr. Davis-Wilson?
Yes.
Dr. Brundage?
No.
Dr. Meyer?
Yes.
We have 5 yeses, 3 noes. Motion carries.
Thank you. Great. This isn't going to happen tomorrow. This is for the Rules Committee to look at
what the, ooh, I'm the chair of the
flavor of the board is. But in all seriousness, we're moving in this direction, and it a big rural state like ours.
I had to vote on principle, so.
Well.
And I can fill.
Well, I'll go out and commiserate with a beer over line.
Face to face.
All right. The last one in number 19 is R426202E, which comes off of ARS 32-2017-4. And this provides that a core program requirement for our education doctoral program. This rule states that the board shall count a course or comprehensive exam only once to satisfy a requirement. So if you're going to use a particular class in ethics, you can't then again turn around and use it in assessment, even though the assessment's got some ethics in it. I'm assuming that's what it means.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Dr. Malott wanted this on the...
This is a Dr. Malott one?
Okay. I guess I was surprised it was only once. I mean, I was thinking it was twice. I don't know why, but... ethics is the one that tends to be the most problematic because of a lot of programs don't have a course, but they embed it throughout the program. And so ethics then becomes a good way to satisfy that requirement. The way the APA standards have changed in terms of curriculum, they are asking for more integrated coursework. So more, I mean, which is something we may have to address down the line, they actually want to see more integrative coursework rather than 3 credit hours in each separate area. Mm-hmm. So we've combined development and biological. We've combined, now of course our students are fine because they'll get their coursework. We've combined cognitive affective, but that's one area for us. Yeah. So in at least 2 areas, they want to see integrative. So I'm thinking if we went up to at least 2, we'd be, in case people fell in that gray area.
I'm all for looking at those requirements. Mm-hmm. COA has changed.
Mm-hmm. They've changed
it. It's going to continue to change. Our whole field of integration is changing.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, integration means something different to everybody. But we should probably look at it, or at least look at options for it that can go there. I don't want to have us stick with 1970s COA requirements. We haven't
changed that the whole time I've been here.
So I think that's one of the ones we have to sit there and look at.
But that's in statute. It's not in rules.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
If we're going to open up the statute, that creates a whole other issue. But other thoughts? No. All right, let's keep that one on the table. We're going to keep looking at it. I think that we have one agenda item left, which I'm going to skip over for the moment, and I will ask for number 22. Are there new agenda items for future meetings?
Yes. I'd like to see Mr. Majors, both his cases, together on the next agenda.
Okay.
So we can deal with both of them.
May I have a clarification? But you're not talking about combining. You're talking about two. Okay.
Two separate ones.
You just want agenda items for each case.
Yes.
Okay.
We can combine them or do whatever you want to do, but at least they're there. We can discuss them individually. We need to
combine the discussion, not combine.
Yeah, we couldn't. Right. It was hard to recall.
So we're not restricted.
Understood.
By how the agenda reads. Okay. Other. Dr. Brundage.
Continuing education. Can we discuss that?
Which?
Continuing education.
Okay.
Audit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the audit cycle is coming up again. How are we going to do that? All right. I'm going to ask staff to leave and go into an executive session for purposes of ARS 38431.
Do you need the recorder?
Yep.
Oh, you need the recorder for the minutes, not to connect.
Because we got some silly state requirement that says everything.
Thank you. It's not on the record. Okay.
All right. We're back out of executive session into open public session. I would entertain a motion regarding the executive director's compensation package.
I would like to make a motion provided by our attorney general that the increase that for salary for the executive director that was discussed in executive session be accepted by this full board.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? Hearing none. All in favor? Aye.
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 Yeah, that was unanimous. Anyone opposed? Motion carries. Now, unless you folks would desperately like to stay and discuss Ukraine. Okay. Moldavia. There are a lot of neat things we can talk about.
No, the agenda.
You need to go get a nap.
I know. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Bye. All in favor? Aye.
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 Anyone opposed? Thank you, everyone. Thank you, staff. Good meeting. And we're out of here before 5. And anytime we do that, it's a good day.
Thank you.